is Bobby Laporte. I am CEO of Bobby Laporte & Associates and host of the Executive Aid Station. In today's competitive and dynamic executive marketplace, we believe that leadership is an endurance event, and we are here to provide the support that today's leaders need. I ran my first marathon at the age of 50. I'm currently training for my 7th Ironman triathlon, and I believe that by adopting the mindset of an athlete, that is using goal setting, strategic awareness, and recovering from setbacks, that individuals will have the advantage in their professional lives. Our show guests are executives who have successfully achieved a balanced life, as well as experts in fitness, health and wellness, and personal leadership. And they share their strategies for living and leading mindfully and gaining a competitive edge in the workplace. My very special guest today is Meg Baer, who calls herself a disruptive technologist, a change agent, career coach, startup advisor, entrepreneur, keynote speaker, blogger, patent holder, TEDx host, and maybe most importantly, wife and mother of two powerful girls. Meg lives and works at the intersection of business, people, and technology. With over 10,000 hours and more than 20 years' experience in enterprise applications, Meg is skilled across a broad spectrum of functional domains, including cloud, security, software as a service, customer relationship management, manufacturing, financials, and human resources, and has had an outstanding success record developing and scaling next-generation enterprise cloud businesses from concept to profit. Meg is passionate about applying technology to solve business problems, about building and growing teams to be their best, and defining market-winning product strategies that are customer-centric and innovative. So, Meg, welcome to the Executive Aid Station podcast.
Thank you for having me, Bobby.
Thank you again for being here. So, my first question, in the intro that I just did, you describe yourself as a disruptive technologist. But in college, you majored in economics and entrepreneurship. So how did you end up with a career in technology?
You know, I am fortunate that I have had, like most of us, a healthy balance of luck and hard work in my career. I was actually hired into a technology startup out of college, and I used that as an opportunity, mostly because it was a startup, to find where my passions were and figure out how I could grow that into a career that I felt was worth having. And a lot of it was timing. So it was a timing for the company, it was timing for me, and it was also timing in a shift in technology, which we're fortunate to have pretty frequently.
And that's where the terms that for you, disruptive technologist, comes in, I would guess. Yes.
Exactly, yeah. So I find that when there's change and technology comes into business as a lever in that time of change, it creates opportunity. And for me personally, it creates a lot of interest because you can use that to create competitive advantage and you can use that to do interesting things.
Very interesting. One of the things that I see in your very prolific writings on the internet is that you talk about your father and what an important role he played in your life. Can you tell us a little bit more about him and why the role of a father is so important today for young girls?
Oh, yes. I am so blessed. So I was raised, I have an older sister, so the two of us were raised by a single dad up until I started school and then had, you know, some back and forth joint custody with both my mom and my dad. So I've had a lot of one-on-one time with a male role model, and I also am fortunate enough to have a dad that's very creative but also very self-taught. So he had a blue-collar job. He was very much focused on helping to set a good foundation for us and making sure that we were thriving as girls under his tutelage. So he used his creativity to solve problems, both large and small, in our childhood and in his own life. And I think that set a really interesting foundation for me of being able to look at things and tinker with things and create your own path that doesn't just take exactly what's given to you, but uses the tools that you have to get to where you want to go. So I'm really lucky. And I should say that my daughters are very fortunate as well. So, you know, like all of us, we don't do anything on our own. It's always a team. And I have a great husband partner, and he is a stay-at-home dad raising two daughters as well. So I think we're continuing the trend of helping girls to really thrive under the leadership of strong and powerful men who are also feminists.
There you go. Wow, they're fortunate that they have that access to him and that he's there and can be that kind of an influence on them as they're growing up.
Yeah, I'm a real believer in it. And I've learned that it creates a different context, especially as you find yourself in careers working in a very male-dominated environment like I tend to be in tech. I'm very comfortable around men, and it feels a little bit more natural, I think, to me than to most because of that sort of strong grounding I have and that strong relationship I've had with my own dad.
And what would you say are the biggest challenge in this environment that you describe? I mean, both like the market and the economic and the social environment, biggest challenges in raising two young girls today?
Well, you know, it's interesting. So the challenges in my own childhood were just so different than the challenges for my kids. I think that's true for all of us because everything has changed so dramatically. I really should preface this that I have teenagers right now, so everything is a challenge and everything is a drama. But in the broader context, you know, I grew up in a very different socioeconomic situation, and I attended 10 different schools to complete my high school education, and I also skipped a grade, so it's actually quite an accomplishment in its own right. I went to college on a Pell Grant. I'm first generation in my entire family to go to college, so you know, my world context and sort of how I got to where I am is night and day from what my children have, which is, you know, they live in this great area in the Bay Area. They go to great schools. They have a lot of access to people who went to college, and that's a very normal part of their growing up. So the challenges I feel today as a parent of teens is a lot about how do you develop grit in children who have a lot of privilege, and how do you help them have some perspective when it's all very competitive and all very narrowly focused, the competitive nature of how to get into the right college or how to get into the right school or all of these things. It's like a lot of pressure at a very early age.
A lot of work. Yes.
And I'm just not sure what the right balance is. I mean, I think any parent will tell you you're making it up and hoping for the best, but I'm very mindful of wanting to build real resilience and not just following the leader, doing the accomplishments to get into the right college. I really want to build humans that are kind and thoughtful and empathetic and have the ability to do the hard work, but also the consciousness to do the right work. And
right.
Yeah, call me back in 10 years and we'll see where it went right and where
well
it didn't go
did.
Right.
Exactly. do they have a sense and appreciation for the difference between how you grew up, the circumstances you grew up in, and the circumstances that they're experiencing? Do they get that?
You know, a little bit, but probably not really. I mean, I think at the end of the day, we all kind of bring to the world our own experiences, and we see the world through our own eyes. And so as much as they can try to comprehend the difference, and they can maybe even know they've heard that, it's not real, right? The reality for them is their experience. And so actually, we talk about this a lot. It's very hard for us to not get frustrated that they're not more grateful or they're not more realizing all of the great things in their life. But at the end of the day, we grow up knowing one set of contexts. And so we learn the world through our own experiences, and that creates our lens in which we see everything from then forward. So I think I care more about that they learn to take other perspectives on, not just the perspective of the difference between my growing up and theirs, but also the other perspectives that are happening in the world today, because there's a lot of need in our world today for perspective taking and for kindness. And I think that's really where I focus as best I can at this point.
Oh, very nice. Yeah, no, I know, absolutely. But I absolutely agree with you. It's definitely a challenge. And yes, we'll check back in 10 years and see. I'm sure they'll turn out to be fabulous and very successful like you. I want to go back to what we talked a little bit about your dad and then about your husband and partner. And so you were talking about working in a male-dominated industry, which obviously tech is. So how would you, can you share with us what are some of the challenges that you've experienced, but also some of the rewards in working in a mostly male-dominated industry?
Yeah. So, you know, again, I should say that I'm here by self-selection. I enjoy working with men. I don't not enjoy working with women, but I feel very comfortable in environments where there's a lot of men. And I think because of that, it's been a situation where I am able to kind of help translate across those different perspectives. And so I take very seriously the role of being at that table, being in that room, not only to help other women, but also to help men to think about what it looks like from a female perspective. And so I think that's a great privilege for me, and I think it's a great opportunity. And I also have found a lot of success in that, not just myself professionally, but in the network that I've built and the relationships that I've built. I feel like I've been fortunate to have a lot of men be very eager to be part of that conversation and to want to understand more where the tension is, or maybe where their perspective is not that whole picture. And I take it even more seriously when you think about what is the customer's point of view. I mean, depending on what industry you're in, odds are, well, it doesn't really matter. Odds are, but there's a high probability more than 50% of your customer base is women, just because that's the base math of it. But a lot of times, if you're selling consumer products or doing things in the broader market, you know, women are more than 85% of the purchasers. And so being able to understand how products and services are received by customers who are women is another important part of that conversation. So I found it a situation where I feel a lot of blessings that come from being in technology and being a woman and being in a senior position, but I also take it really seriously to make sure that contribution is representing customers, is representing other women in the broader organization, and helping to really bring shareholder value forward as best I can with the perspective and the experience that I have.
Right. So I think you are known as a role model for women in the tech industry. So why is that important to you? Tell me how you feel about that, and how do you go about sort of like actualizing that, and at the same time that you're having the perspective you just shared, where yes, I want to be part of that conversation and help to shape the conversation, but it's also really about the business impact.
Yeah, so very, you know, for the early part of my career, I think I fell into a trap that a lot of high achievers fall into, which was my entire perspective was about the results of the work, right? If I do the work and the products show up on time, that the rest of it doesn't matter.
Follow, right.
Exactly. And that's really true to a certain level of your career. Certainly at the early stages, it's about your work. But as you start getting into leadership positions, there's a nuance that happens where your network becomes more important, and then when you start talking about executive leadership, it's at that point where I personally hit a little bit of a wall where I realized that my prioritization was completely off and I was getting in my own way a little bit on that. But the other thing that I started noticing as I was promoted into some of the more senior roles, I started having women comment to me that, oh, I'm so glad that there's a woman being promoted into this role. And at first, my reaction was one of, I'm not sure I'm comfortable representing all women with this. I wasn't trying to do the work to make a statement about women. I was just trying to do the work. And so that moment happened for me when I realized more and more people were commenting that my success wasn't my success alone, and I needed to care more deeply about what does my success mean to others, and not for the ego, but for the sense of that they could feel that those opportunities would be available to them, that they could be seen.
Right.
And And at that moment, I started having a totally different opinion about how I wanted to show up. I realized that I wanted to take very seriously that these opportunities were available to me, and it would be irresponsible for me to hold myself back and say it didn't matter because I didn't want to be too showy or I didn't want to be too out there. I realized that people were finding their own courage by seeing me express courage. And so then I felt a really big shift. And so I started doing more things. I started, you know, being on the stage more, being on more panels and doing more keynote speeches and things like that to be visible in the roles that I take and to give the opportunity for people to see themselves in these roles, especially in tech where we're struggling so hard to retain women in the more senior positions. People don't select into it in college and then they drop out when they get into the professional workforce. And I feel that tech's been good to me, and I want to help people see that there is a path that doesn't require you to change who you are or be less female or any of those things, but can really be help you thrive in that being yourself. And so I take it very seriously now that I want to do my best, not for myself, but for the opportunities that opens up for others that come after me and for the courage that it helps others to find in themselves.
So when you talk about how you represent the possibilities and the potential for others, so for women, like emerging leaders, women on the leadership track who you know or who come to hear you speak or in your organization, what are the one or two pieces of advice that you typically find yourself almost always giving them when they say, well, what, you know, how do I create what's next? What should I be doing differently? Are there a couple of different things, themes that continue to come up that you share with them?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the first thing I always encourage people, and this is not exclusively to women, this is to anybody as they grow into their career, is that it's important that you really know who you are and that you know what your strengths are and that you use those strengths not just to do the job that you're given, but to help create the next job and to help create opportunity for yourself so that when you find those moments for stretch, you're finding them in areas that lean on your strengths and help you differentiate the quality of work you're going to do versus anyone else. And the secret or the hidden part about that is that it also builds your own energy, right? When you do things that you're uniquely good at, that you know you do good work, you're usually happier and you're usually more satisfied in the work that you're doing. And so I tell people never make your job exclusively only the piece of paper that they gave you that said these are the job tasks you have to get done.
Right.
Sure, you have to get that done to satisfy why they hired you, but look at your job and say, where else, what are my gifts that I can bring that not only help me develop more strength and more muscle, but also help differentiate me and create the possibility for the next thing. So everything you're doing should always be looking at, how do I build more opportunity along the way? How do I make sure that when I finish this thing that they've given me to do, that I've set myself up for the next thing to be doing that successfully?
Right, absolutely. That's wonderful. Totally agree. So shifting gears just a little bit, in your leadership blog, you share, this was earlier in the year, that you were inspired by Melinda Gates, who has a New Year tradition of picking a word and then building a deliberate practice around that word for the year. You chose the word generous, which, from what I've read, is, you know, means has lots of different interpretations for you. But tell me why you picked that word. And now that we're more than halfway through, hard to believe, through the year, tell me what's been your experience during the year building this practice. I mean, what has it been like and what have you learned?
Yeah, so I think, you know, as I mentioned before, you know, earlier in my career, I found that I was investing a lot in the work and not a lot in the network. And, you know, as I shifted and as I grew as a human, I started caring more about my network and how I could do more across other organizations, other people, and how I could give back more. And about a decade ago, I created this goal for myself of, hey, how do I help others achieve greatness? How do I take the energy that I have and the momentum that I have, and how do I make that something that helps others? How do I launch them forward? And how do I use that to help build my own energy and teach me new things? And so it's been about a decade for me that I have been focusing deeply on helping others. And that's created an enormous amount of blessings that have come back my way, as you can imagine, because when you put a lot of good energy out there and you purposefully make others feel good about themselves, it's amazing how much of that comes back to you. So in this year, I said, okay, how do I push that a little bit more? How do I make that a deliberate practice? Right. And so that's where I went, okay, where am I not generous, right? Because that's a generous thing to do, helping others. I do a lot of coaching. I support a lot of people in their career path, either building their own confidence or building a strategy and all of that. But where I'm not particularly generous, if I'm honest with myself, is a lot of times my generosity of thought takes work for me. So if I know you and we've built this relationship, I have a lot of generosity of thought of how can I help you, how can I bring you forward. But if I don't know you, I can be a little bit lazy. I can take the easy way of assuming your intention and maybe not giving you the benefit of the doubt in that intention. Or if somebody is in a hurry and they cut me off, I instantly go to, well, you're a jerk, as opposed to maybe you're late. You know, it's easy to take that generosity away when it's just everyday things. So I really wanted to up my own mindfulness of how can I try to take everything where I start to feel that little bit of negativity in my own thinking about a certain situation, how can I take a breath and ask myself, is there a way to be more generous about how I see this? And can that help me leave the negativity behind and bring forward the positivity? Mm-hmm. What I think I knew when I set this out for myself, I think I knew that this was going to be a tough year for generous thoughts, right? We've had a lot of things going on in the world that gives you a lot of opportunity to feel stress or negativity. And I think that when I set this goal, I knew that it was going to be really more important than ever to keep going back to your core center of, grace. And so I wanted to build a practice in. So the question is, how am I doing? Better than if I didn't have this objective. I have good days and I have bad days, but it's really helpful to catch myself when I'm maybe being less generous than I need to and say, is this really in line with who I want to be this year? And I know for fact that focusing on that positivity anywhere where I can find it and at a minimum attributing the best possible intention to anything negative that comes my way helps me personally not be taken down, to keep my optimism and to keep the things that I love about myself to the front and let go of the things that are maybe a little bit more negative.
Right. Excellent. Good for you. It's really part of, we talked about this a little bit earlier, about this whole area of positive psychology and the practice of positivity. And there's lots of science behind it that basically validates what you were saying. It can really change the way, it changes the chemistry in your brain. It changes the way you connect with people. It has a broadening and building kind of an effect when you just take that 1 second to respond rather than react, right, and try to see,
yes,
let me give this person the benefit of the doubt. What's the positive element here? So I really applaud you for making this for working on this practice.
And as I'm sure the research says, at the end of the day, you benefit probably more from it than the people you're thinking you're being generous towards, because the negativity hurts you, right? So
it does, but there's also lots of benefits for other people. And so it definitely benefits you, but there are concurrent benefits as well when you connect with individuals. I mean, there's a whole science behind this, but there's so much more payoff and outcome to what you're doing, I think, than maybe you originally thought about based on the new science now around this generosity of thought. So again, I think it's just really interesting that you chose that, and we'll have to check back with you in January of 2018 to see what your word for next year will be.
Yes, let's do that.
About that now, right? So before we close up, it's clear from everything you've discussed today about your family and your work and the things that you do to support women and other things that you're doing in the industry that you have a very, very busy life. between career and home, but somehow it seems to me, from what we've talked about today and from what I know about you personally, that you're able to, for the most part, make it work. So do you have any particular practices or secrets that you can share about how you do it?
Yes, I love this topic, and I love to share it because you can imagine, as a woman in tech, you get asked the whole, how do you balance work and life? And, you know, I think we all struggle with this, and I do have a couple tips that I think are important. So the first, I believe deeply that the better you know yourself, the better you can do with any of this, but it's important to manage your energy and not your time. I think the whole concept of work-life balance and only do this much at work and this much at home is just a recipe for us all to feel bad about ourselves, and I really don't think that's helpful for anything. You know, adding guilt on top of any of the other stuff going on is not a productive way to go about it. But what I've learned about myself over time is that certain parts of the day are really highly tuned for certain types of activities for me. Mm-hmm. And if I can manage how I disperse the tasks that I do, how much extroversion, how much time off, when to eat, when to take breaks, when to exercise, if I can do that for what works for me, I find I can handle way more and I'm way, way better tuned to the tasks. So I get more done and I feel better about it at the end of it. So the more you can really tinker with that, tinker with yourself like you would tinker with a project plan to figure out how to lay out your day,
right?
Lay out your week, and optimize, because you're going to run out of time. So figure out how to do that on purpose. And then my second thing is get all the help you can and then a little bit more. Whatever it is you need help with, don't make that a drama. Make that something that you embrace and get help where you need it, and that's both help on your personal time, that's help, you know, getting a coach if you need it, getting somebody to help you with your exercise if you need it, somebody to help you with your nutrition if you need it, somebody to help you, you know, focus on your priorities, clean your house, watch your kids, go shopping for whatever it is that you could benefit from help, use that in the mix as well to tinker with the balance of where you spend your time and how to optimize yourself.
Excellent. Thank you very much for those tips. Those are very helpful. So what are some special projects or things that you're excited about that you're working on now? Anything?
Yeah, so I'd love to. So, you know, I'm at an interesting career moment where I'm in between my next opportunity. And I've been using this time to do a couple things that are really exciting. One, I'm doing a lot more advisory work for startups, both because I have a little time and because there's a lot of really interesting things going on right now where that gets to my next thing. Because I am somebody that loves to learn new things and I'm also a geek, I'm digging pretty deep into this place where data and artificial intelligence is starting to take us and how that's both shifting what's going to mean for how we work, but also what it's going to mean for new ways of doing business and, frankly, new economic opportunities as well across our landscape. I don't have any magic bullets about where to invest or any of that, but I do feel very strongly that we're at kind of the beginning of what will be another interesting decade or so of growth. So similar to when the iPhone first came out and then things really changed, we're coming very, very close to all of these things we're doing to track data and all of the different things we can learn based on that. And it's going to be interesting to see if that creates, you know, where that takes us as humans and as business. So that's where I'm using my brain candy opportunities right now.
Very interesting. Well, maybe that'll be partly inform your path for what's the next chapter in your career.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes, it's going to be fun.
Yeah. Oh, that would be very cool. So where can our listeners find you? What you've shared with us today, so you have so much going on, so many very different, interesting projects and perspectives. So if people want to stay in touch with you, how do they do that?
Yeah, so two really obvious ones. I'm pretty active on both LinkedIn and Twitter. LinkedIn at Meg Bear and LinkedIn and Twitter both at Meg Bear. And you can also find me at megbear.com, and I've got lots of links to all the other places you can connect with me or geek out with me about any of these things. And if there's any way that I can be of help, don't hesitate to ping me about that as well.
Well, excellent. And we'll make sure we put that in the write-up. So, listen, Meg, I mean, we haven't connected for a while, but I'm so glad that we were able to do that today, and it's really been a pleasure talking to you and having you be a guest on our show. I've really enjoyed this conversation and appreciate your advice and insights for our listeners. And as far as our listeners, thank you for your time. Thank you for joining us. That's it for today's show, so please visit our website, www.bobbylaporte.com, and sign up for our Executive Aid Station updates. I look forward to sharing our next episode of the Executive Aid Station, so stay tuned.